Mose and Kofi were at the medical bay, sitting on ceramic crates with their backs against one of the walls that hadn't been taken down. As Philip came close, Mose lifted his hands, asking a question without saying what it was. "Mining, though," Kofi said, continuing the conversation they were already having. "There's a lot we can do as long as we've got power. The fuel pellets run out, and then what? No hydroponics. The yeast vats stop working. Kofi's decided we're all gonna die because he's out of cigarettes. It's not just that, it's everything. The guns are out of cartridges, med centers out of bone density drugs, security's down to half a dozen tasers. You think those big fuckers are going to give a shit about tasers? And the fabrication lab can't just print new parts out of nothing. The printers aren't magic. They need metal and industrial clay, carbon. And even if we get everything where we don't starve to death, shit, we're gonna need to make babies. Oh, for fuck's sake. No, serious. We don't have any kids here. Youngest person in Beta's probably 20-something. We're all going to be dead of old age and no one to keep things going if we don't."
"Good thing there's no kids. You'd be scaring the shit out of them," Mose said, and spat like it was punctuation.
"How about we don't start freaking out about our legacy until Alpha gets their radio working and we hear from that survey mission? Anyway, what we need now is some fucking carts. I'm not strapping this shit to my back and walking it halfway up a mountain. I don't care if we are under 4/10.
"Don't wait underwater," Philip said. Mose scowled.
"What's that mean?"
Philip shook his head and left it at that. Over the next 4 hours, the town slowed to a halt. The teams that had been focused on taking the structures apart paused. The piles of supplies stopped getting bigger. Conversations were quiet and tense. People stood with their heads close together. The expectation of action, of business, of having the hours filled to the top with things that needed to be done and done fast, gave way to a half-nauseating torpor. Outside the town, the maintenance crew shouted a little too much and laughed a little too loud. The afternoon was slipping into early evening when Leeward and the others came back. Philip watched from a distance, the same as everybody else, as Evelyn Albert and Nami Vey headed north past the wall. The tightness in Philip's chest made him feel like he was a child again, waiting for something bad to happen. He checked the power feed to the magnetic bolt thrower on top of the fabrication lab. It gave him something to do, and he couldn't bring himself to stay still. He wasn't there when Leeward and Yandro faced off, but he heard about it. Leeward had shouted himself red in the face about how Yandro was defying the will of the town and breaking the plan. They'd lost a day because of him, and the carts had better be cleaned and ready to start the evacuation in the morning. According to Kofi, Yandro had listened and been calm while Leeward poked him in the chest and yelled in his face. Then he'd said that Leeward's plan was a bad plan, and that Yandro wasn't going to let the town do something that could get them all killed just to save Leeward's feelings. Then he tousled the science lead's hair and walked away. Just like that. Like a big brother messing with his little sibling.
"You should have seen it," Kofi said, awe in his voice. "You should have been there."
"No," Philip said. His stomach felt like someone had punched it. "I'm fine here." They were sitting on a bench with legs made from spools of optical wire and the seat of a local tree analog with veins of green and blue lacing through pale, wood-like flesh. Philip, Kofi, and Mose. With their backs against the medical center wall, they could see the plaza. The dark stain had almost vanished, and Philip wondered idly what had happened to the blood. Around the town, other little groups were huddled together like they were. The uneasy sense of conflict was like smoke in the wind, an invisible maybe threat that everyone felt, and no one could see.
Leeward's an asshole, Mose said.
Is, Kofi agreed.
But he's the boss, asshole. Or used to be, I guess. Now, I don't know.
Philip knew how this would have gone before. There would have been a message sent out at the speed of light, tight beam lasers hitting relays one after another out to the ring gate and back to an administrator at Emmerling Voss, then a conversation with the union rep, then authorization for the company to sanction Yandro and his team. Loss of pay, loss of union benefits, a berth back out maybe. Maybe on the Rhymer, maybe on one like her. Part of Philip was still expecting it to play out that way. It wouldn't, though. Leeward had made a plan and gotten people to agree, and he'd failed. There was no corporation or union behind him. There was no process now. Just power.
You're not eating, Mose said.
And Philip realized the man had still been talking to him.
Not that hungry.
This is crap, Mose said, lifting his bowl.
Did we run out of sauce?
Yeah, Kofi said.
Plain is what we get from now on.
Barrett, over in the chemistry group, is looking at what we can harvest from the local organisms that won't taste like shit or kill us. We'll have something in a few weeks, probably.
I'm not eating alien shit. Mose said.
Are you crazy? None of this stuff's made with the same chemistry we are.
There's some overlap. And salt's salt, no matter where you go.
I'm just hoping we can find something that tastes like pepper. Or cumin.
We'll get resupplied from Alpha when the radio comes back up, Mose said. I can eat shit until then.
If there's still an Alpha, Kofi said. They've been down for a long time. And if they didn't eat all their stuff while we were eating ours, not like they're getting resupplied.
He lifted his bowl like he was displaying an exhibit.
This shit is all the shit there is.
Mose's cheeks darkened and his lips went thin.
You know what? Fuck you.
He stood up, shoulders high around his neck, and stalked off, muttering.
Kofi watched him leave with surprise in his eyes.
What's with him?
All of it, I guess, Philip said. Our ship, our team in Alpha, the gate. It's a lot, you know.
Kofi nodded.
I forget how new you two are around here. Beta was just supposed to be a stop for you.
It was.
Kofi took another scoop of the yeast protein in his bowl and nodded toward Philip.
You should eat.
It's not good, but none of this gets better by starving.
Philip made a scoop of his first and middle fingers. The mush was bland and viscous. His gut was too tight, but he swallowed it anyway, pleased not to gag.
What do you remember?
Okay?
About the thing before the gate went away.
Kofi nodded.
There was only one thing before the gate went away.
I don't know. It's hard to bring it back now. I was here working on, I think, the water feed. And then I was other people, or no one. And I was huge.
What about you?
It's like a dream, you know? How when it's over, you don't remember? Like whatever it was doesn't fit in your head? I was in this dream.
And you woke up in a fucking nightmare.
Philip laughed, and Kofi laughed with him.
Fuck, you know? It's just, Mose is weird. I get that. But I keep thinking the Rhymer's coming. Or that 17's finishing up in Alpha and coming here. Or I'll go there. Or our next contract was in Tredevi system. 5 work group contract putting a power grid up for a city of 500,000 people. We were going to be hauling teams in and out for 4 years, and we were just doing the backbone. I keep thinking about how that'll be, like it was still going to happen. 500,000 people. And now, there's 400. All those others are still out there.
Are they? I don't know that. Maybe everyone else, everywhere else, got snuffed out like candles, and we're the only ones left. How would we know? There's Alpha, maybe. There's the survey team. You know what I mean.
Yeah, Kofi said.
Across the plaza, Eric Tannhäuser, a short, blonde man with skin so pale you could see the veins in his forehead, was talking to Mina Joku. He was shaking his head and pointing an angry finger up in the tall woman's face. Nami Ve appeared at his side, and Tannhäuser turned his wrath, whatever it was, on her. Philip tried to take another bite of his food, but couldn't bring himself to do it. You think they'll call another vote? He asked. Kofi shrugged. If they do, I'll bet you half a week's wages that Yandro wins it. You should have seen him. Leeward spitting like a wet cat and Yandro letting it all wash past him like it was nothing. Anyway, doesn't matter what the vote was. We're staying here, holding our ground. Maybe we won't have to. Maybe those things already moved past us, moved on. Or maybe they're growing wings and getting ready to breathe fire. Who knows on this planet? Kofi took a last scoop of his meal, then held the empty bowl up like an exhibit. I am going to get mighty fucking tired of this. Mose didn't come back to the cots after dinner. Philip lay on his back, one arm behind his head like a pillow, and waited for sleep that wouldn't come. Every time he started to drift, some tiny noise would pour adrenaline into his bloodstream and snap him awake again. He wasn't even certain what he was anxious about. There were so many options. When he didn't sleep, he thought about Yandro. He imagined the confrontation with Leeward, building versions of it from Kofi's description, putting himself into it. The knot in his stomach kept getting tighter. Yandro smiling his wide, sharp threat of a smile. The man was a hero. He'd ridden one of those monsters. He'd saved the town, maybe, when he'd steered it into the plaza and within range of the slug thrower. He didn't remember who'd said it, but when he'd been much younger, someone had told him that saving money for an economic collapse was a bad plan. Who knew what script would matter and what would just be a number in an account no one cared about? The things that would last were bullets and liquor, not cash. When the apocalypse came, bullets and liquor would be the only currency that mattered. They weren't wrong. Beta could have used a lot more of both. But that half-remembered giver of wisdom wasn't talking about Beta. They'd been talking about the bombardment of Earth. They'd been talking about the billions of people Philip had killed. Philip and his father. He wondered if Mose was out somewhere in the town right now, finding whoever had been smart enough to set up a distilling pot. They'd be the richest person in Beta soon, whoever did that. Until someone else made some bullets and took it from them. Fuck, he said to the darkness, and hauled himself up. His jumpsuit was filthy. He'd take it to the river tomorrow and let some of the dirt wash out of it, but tonight it was slick and sticky, and he felt dirty putting it on. Outside, the night sky was a riot of stars, and the astringent stink of the broken ground north of town was thicker. He didn't know why that was, and probably no one else did either. He stuck his hands in his pockets, put his head down, and walked. If the monsters were coming tonight, they'd have started singing earlier. He'd be out north of the town with a torch in his hand, with Yandro and Leeward and all the others. It was a fucked up thing to feel nostalgic about, but at least they'd all still be on the same side. Maybe they would be. Maybe now it was different. He wondered if Yandro went to risk his life for the town again, whether Leeward would try to stop him the way he had last time. It was harder to picture. The breeze was cool against his cheeks,
and the light gravity wasn't enough to make his joints ache. Here and there in the town, lights glowed, and the local insects drawn by them made little humming clouds. He heard a few voices, but they weren't raised in anger. They were just people talking, some of them laughing. A couple having some kind of sex, he was pretty sure. Human sounds. It was bigger than a ship, but not so much that he couldn't get back some of the feeling of walking decks. He could almost imagine that Beta was an old colony ship burning through the long darkness. He could make sense of it that way. The planet was just a weirdly designed ship, spinning through the same vacuum he'd grown up in. The people of the town were crew and passengers, their fates locked together by the ship's recyclers and the thrust of the drive. The problems and dangers they faced might express differently. There weren't great, strange, smiling monsters lumbering through space, but there were micrometeors and the unforgiving vacuum always trying to get in. The mission was the same. Keep the food supply going. Keep the water drinkable. Don't boil in your own waste heat. Survive. That was always the job. Survive. By the time he'd made it all the way back around, the knot in his stomach was looser. The fatigue of the day had come out from under the tension and fear. He could imagine sleep. Mose was on his cot, snoring gently. Philip stripped down to his undershirt in the darkness and crawled into his own. Mose muttered something once, but settled back down to sleep without making sense. Philip's body felt like it was growing heavier, the cot rising up from below, like the ground had started a faster burn. Leeward and Yondro, Nami Ve, and smiling monsters were all still there, floating through his thoughts like echoes from another deck. He could ignore them, let them go. When he closed his eyes, it felt comfortable to let them stay that way. Even the little pang of hunger wasn't enough to keep him awake. Philip slept. And, for the first time in more than a decade, he dreamed about his father.
"We found them."
"Who?"
Jackson said.
"The big fuckers, the monsters," Cameron said. He was practically hopping up and down with excitement. Jackson made eye contact with Philip in a way that meant, "Can you keep the work going while I deal with this?" Philip wiped the sweat off his forehead and nodded in a way that meant he could. Jackson stood with a grunt. The food production unit they'd started taking apart yesterday, they were putting back together today. The racks that had been emptied of cylinders were almost half full now, and half of the remounts had power. It was slower putting together than it had been taking apart. Philip felt like that was true of a lot of things.
"So, what are you talking about?" Jackson asked.
"Mohammed Klein? Fat Mohammed, not the one with the bent nose?" "He put chemical sensors on the survey drones. The reason we couldn't track them before is that there's another species that follows them. Little bird things that eat the grubs and stuff that the big fuckers churn up. It's like they're sweeping away the tracks. Only the tracks are outgassing trace ammonia where they dig down to hibernate or whatever. So we found them." Philip took one of the capacitors, a flat red box a little larger than his hand, and triple-checked the charge status before he fitted into the base of a cylinder. His attention was on Cameron. The big bastard's tracks were giving off trace ammonia, like a freshly scrubbed toilet. Philip realized they'd had an early warning system all along. Jackson spat on the ground.
"Where are they?"
"Everywhere, north of here, south of here, all over the valley." Philip and Jackson shared a look.
"I can't finish it all, but I can get it to a good stopping place," Philip said. "I mean, if you want to go see about working on the defenses."
"Better should," Jackson said.
"Yeah."
Jackson smoothed their hands on the fronts of their thighs like they were wiping the palms clean, then walked off with Cameron toward the science labs. Philip hoisted the next cylinder into place, steadying it with one hand while he fixed the bolts to hold it. It was a little unwieldy, without another pair of hands to help, but it wasn't bad. At a full G, it would have been impossible. All around the town, people were doing similar work. The false start at moving left everything half broken down, or half put together, depended on how you looked at it. The sky had taken on an almost emerald green. To the west, pure white clouds billowed up so high they seemed like they'd reach orbit. Philip didn't like looking at them. He'd gotten to where living without the safety of a ship didn't panic him, but something about the cloud banks made the scale of planetary life harder to ignore. It was odd, the way that living in an emptiness infinitely vaster than the distance between him and even the tallest cloud could feel comfortable if there was a thin bubble of metal around him. Something about the perspective, probably. The universe was always vast, if he thought about it. The trick was not to see more of it than he could stand at any given moment, and picking the right part to look at. He put the last bolt in place, checked that everything was stable, and grabbed up another capacitor. This one was still holding charge, so he set it to a safe ground cycle and sat back for the minutes-long wait. He heard Leeward before he saw him. "Put that back. That isn't yours." Philip leaned forward to get a better look. They were coming from the east side of town, moving in the aisle between the buildings where months of habit had stripped away the plants and left packed dirt behind. Not dignified enough to call a street, but where one would be, given time. Two men in maintenance crew uniforms were pulling a handcart. It was a low thing, with wheels broader than they were deep, like a yellow steel pallet on rollers. The science lead was behind them, chin high, and lifting his knees with every step like he was marching. He looked angry, which Philip had seen before, but he also looked ridiculous, which was new. It wasn't him. Not really. It was the grinning and snickering of the maintenance crew.
"You stop!" Leeward shouted. "We have need of that. You can't just take it."
The taller of the maintenance crew pair leaned over and said something to the shorter one, too quietly for Philip to hear. The shorter one chuckled. It wasn't a kind sound. Around the other buildings, a few people paused to look. Leeward made a strangled sound and darted forward. He grabbed the back end of the cart and tried to yank it back. The cart bucked, and the two maintenance men stopped smiling. They let the cart's lead drop to the ground and turned. The smaller one put his arms out at his sides, widening him.
"What the fuck are you doing, Koyo?"
he asked, and Philip felt a little thrill of fear. He knew that tone. He knew what it meant, even if Leeward didn't.
"This," Leeward said, stabbing a finger at the handcart, "is the property of the bioscience lab. It's not construction equipment. You can't just come in and take whatever you want whenever you want it."
The taller one feigned sadness. When he spoke, his voice was a high, mocking sing-song. "Oh, it's not construction equipment. Oh, no, so sad, so angry." Then he grinned and stepped forward, speaking in a regular, low voice.
"It's what we say it is."
"Take it back now,"
Leeward said, but he quavered. He was starting to understand what was going on.
"Or else what?" the shorter one said. "What are you talking about?"
"I said, or else what?
What are you going to do when we don't, eh?"
Leeward glanced around, saw the eyes on them. Philip felt his humiliation, like they were passing through a resonance frequency, like they were back in the dream together, like it was his own. Leeward stepped forward, reaching for the cart again, ready to take it back himself. The tall one put both hands on Leeward's chest and shoved. In the light gravity, the fall took a few seconds, Leeward's legs flailing as he went down. When he landed, it still knocked the breath out of him. The shorter one laughed and stepped forward, his hands in fists. "Hey!" Philip shouted. One syllable, but hard, sharp. It brought the two maintenance men around. Well, fuck, Philip thought as he stood up. It was too late to think about whether he wanted to be in this. He already was. And as he walked across toward the two men, he didn't actually regret it. The taller one made a show of looking Philip up and down. "You a friend of this one's?"
"I don't know him," Philip said. "I'm just a subcontractor."
"So what are we talking about, subcontractor?" Behind them, Leeward was coming to his feet. There was finally some real fear in his eyes. Late, but better now than never. Philip considered the two men. They were younger than he was. They'd grown up in gravity wells, he could tell from their builds. In a fight, they'd kick his ass. The smart thing was to back down. He wasn't feeling smart. All around them, work had stopped. The violence against Leeward was shocking, maybe, but with everything going on, they had to expect it. The new guy standing up was unexpected. If he weren't doing it, he'd be keeping a weather eye on it, too.
"Just want you to know how you're going to be when I come take your tools without asking," Philip said.
In the back of his mind, Mose said, "We're union." It was ridiculous, but what else did he have?
"Yandro's pissed at him. That's not my problem. I don't care who likes you. I'm just here getting the work done. But you need something? Union has rules about how you get it. This isn't that."
"Union?" the short one said, tilting his head. For a moment, Philip was sure the man was going to come for him, that there was about to be violence between them. He wasn't scared. He wanted it. He had a visceral memory of being a child, barely in his adolescence, leading a raid on Martian shipyards, watching soldiers die, the enemy and his own. He remembered that joy. More than that, he felt it again, just a little. The short one must have seen something change in him, because he looked confused for a moment and took a half step back.
"He's right, Alan," Jackson said, appearing at his elbow. "You know better than this."
The taller one shrugged theatrically. Alan, apparently. Philip really didn't need to start learning these names.
"Whatever, Jax. Whatever your whatever," Jackson said. "It's a work site, not a playground. Get the fuck back to work."
When the maintenance men turned back to the cart, Leeward was gone. No one mentioned him. They just took the cart by the lead and pulled it off to the north. Philip watched them go.
"Well, you got balls, Nagata,"
Jackson said when they were out of earshot.
"I'll give you that. You want some free advice? Don't get in the middle of this."
"I hear you," Philip said.
"Cover for me for a little, okay? You've got something to do?"
"Yeah," he said.
"Then, don't let Cameron—" "We'll wait for you on the power hookups.
I'm not stupid," Jackson said. "Just be careful."
He hadn't been in Namive's office since he and Mose had arrived on the shuttle. They'd done their project intake there, affirming all the corporate boilerplate they always affirmed, getting their bunk assignments and the review of local legal policy. He hadn't paid much attention. It was the same space, just green and gray prefabricated walls with a little window and a light metal desk. All the small details he noticed now had probably been there before. The picture of a man with dark hair and a thin beard in a silver frame on her desk. The little vase with local flowers in the corner. The discreet silver cross on the wall. He hadn't picked Namive as pious, but it didn't surprise him. The woman herself was the same. He had an image in his mind of what she looked like. But as he talked, as he watched her for signs of how she was hearing him, she didn't really match the picture. He thought of her as professionally, blandly attractive, with the gentle eyes and hard smile of someone whose job it was to say things were all right, even when they were not. But she actually had a much more expressive face, with a webwork of wrinkles at the corners of her mouth and eyes that seemed equally at ease with both sorrow and laughter. Her hair was auburn and touched with gray, but it had more warmth to it than he remembered. He suddenly found himself wanting her to like him. "Sit," she said, gesturing to a rickety stool in front of her desk. He did, and spread his hands in an old belter gesture of passing on a task. "Your administration here. I don't know what needs to happen, but I'm not the one to do it." He half expected her to say, "What am I supposed to do?" And it would have been a good question. To her credit, she leaned forward, elbows on the desk, and pursed her lips. "Did they hurt him?" "I don't know," Philip said. "You'd have to ask him. They knocked him down. And Alejandro wasn't there. They were his people. There's a way people get sometimes, and if it sets in, you can't get it back. It's like contempt," Namive said, and her voice had none of its usual pleasantness. There was exhaustion in its place, and maybe a kind of mordant humor. "It's contempt. It's a problem. Somebody has to do something about it." "And that somebody is me," she said ruefully. "Thank you, Philip. I may need your help again, but I hear you, and I will take this seriously."
"Is that going to be enough?"
She frowned her question.
"I mean," Philip said, "does Yandro still listen to you?"
"You used to have pull, but you had the company behind you then.
I had the union.
We had... Now, is he going to listen?"
"We'll make it work," she said with enough conviction that he could almost convince himself she had answered the question.
"You don't understand what he is," Philip said, trying to keep the frustration out of his voice.
To his surprise, Namive didn't brush him off. Whatever she was seeing on his face made her frown and settle back in her chair. "Tell me, Philip."
"Men like him," he started, then stopped. "My father was like that. Strong, certain. People loved him and wanted him to love them. They wanted to have even a tiny piece of his confidence if they could. It made them do terrible things so that he would notice them."
"Like what?" she asked. Philip didn't answer. He suddenly found he couldn't meet her eyes. She nodded and smiled, then pointed at the cross hanging on the wall.
"My mother was a saint," she said.
Philip couldn't tell if that was sarcastic or not. "When she died here a few years ago, I think a lot of the people at this colony were surprised that the sun didn't go out."
"Sorry, I never met her."
"You say that now," Nami said with a laugh. "But having anyone care that much and try that hard to save you from yourself can be fucking exhausting."
"Do I get to pick? Because..."
"Look," Nami said, "I don't need to hear all the ways your father made life harder for you, and I'm not going to explain how living with Saint Anna broke a few things for me. We have no reason to compete, you and I. The only point is that our parents can lay burdens on us, all without meaning to, that we'll have to carry around for the rest of our lives, and there's nothing we can do about that. But you and I still get to decide how we carry those burdens." She reached across the table and took his hand. Hers was warm and dry. Her smile was both sad and comforting at the same time. It made Philip want to scream at her.
"That's all well and good, but this Yandro problem isn't going away," Philip said, and yanked his hand away,
needing to break the shared intimacy of the moment, and finding himself almost happy to see her smile disappear.
I know, she replied.
Philip jumped up off the stool and bullied his way out the door, slamming his shoulder into the frame as he went. Once he was back out of her office and into the town, things felt different. He couldn't tell whether the others were watching him, seeing the junior power tech in a new light, or if he only imagined that they were. His chest felt tight, like he was just a little too far from his ship with not enough air in his tank. He found himself bouncing up with each step, pushing too hard against the ground. Mose was waiting for him by the food cylinders, arms crossed. The clouds in the west had come much closer, and the smell of rain was in the air. Jackson and Cameron weren't there, but their toolboxes were, like Mose had asked them to leave for a little bit. Philip put his back against the steel racks and shoved his hands in his pockets.
The fuck are you doing, Nagata?
Mose's voice was soft, but there was a buzz in it. Anger, maybe fear.
Are you getting us involved with these people's problems? Is that what you're up to?
We're going to be here, at least for a while, maybe for longer than that. Their problems don't stop with them.
That's bullshit.
It isn't, Philip said. And Mose took a step back like the words had been a slap. I know men like Yandro. People are scared and they're hurting, yeah? And some big man comes along and he seems confident. He looks sure of himself. All the things that are eating at your heart, they aren't eating at his. And yeah, he gets a team. Everyone falls in line behind him and bad things happen. The worst things.
Mose cleared his throat, but Philip kept going before he could speak.
We're at the start of something here. We can't let it slide. If it's okay now, it's okay forever. You plug a leak when it's small, or you suffer when it's big. And you think you're going to fix it. I saw a problem. I took it to administration. But these are not the kind of people who know what to do with this.
What kind are they, then?
Mose asked.
Gentle, Philip said.
They're gentle.
So maybe it's not your job to find the toughest son of a bitch in this place and make an enemy out of him.
That's how it works, Mose. No one stands up, and no one stands up.
I don't know what the fuck personal shit you're working through, Mose said. I don't much care. I'm telling you as your supervisor, we stay out of local drama. We're putting in time here until we can get back to Alpha and 17.
And when I tell you to fuck off, when I tell you your rules don't matter anymore, and I do what I want, then what, Mose?
When I'm like Yandro, what do you do?
How do you stop me? Because we both know there's no union behind you anymore. And don't fucking mistake me for one of the gentle locals, Koyo.
Mose's scowl dug lines into his cheeks.
You're out of line, Nagata, he said, pointing a finger at the center of Philip's chest.
You're way the fuck out of line.
But then he walked away. What else was he going to do? Philip turned back to the cylinders. He needed to get them mounted and the walls back up before the storm came. Philip walked through the downpour. The rain floated down, moving slowly enough in the fractional gravity for the drops to join each other and become a heavy, unforgiving mist punctuated by water balloons. Somewhere behind the cloud cover, the sun was setting. He could only tell by the world growing slowly darker around him. The plaza wasn't empty. Several of the buildings had walls that swung up and out, making awnings where people could sit with the weather without being in it. Little pools of light, like pictures of street carts on planets Philip had never stood on. He passed the place where the monster had been unmade. Even close up, there was no sign of the blood, but he thought he caught a whiff of something strange, like overheated iron. By the time he reached the administration building, he was soaked. He knocked on the door, and Namive called him in. In the hours since he'd been there, the metal desk had been taken out, and more chairs had been brought in and put in a little circle. It looked like a very small support group meeting. Leeward sat with his back to the door. Yandro, across from him, sat with his legs spread and his arms out, resting on the backs of chairs to either side of him. Namive was the professional version of herself again, smiling and gracious. Philip was surprised to realize he was sorry to see that.
Hey, Nagata, Yandro said.
Oye, Yandro, Philip said, then turned his attention to Namive.
You wanted me?
And thank you for being here, she said, motioning him into one of the empty chairs. There were some questions about what exactly happened today. I was hoping you could help us with what you remember. Yandro turned a half-smile to the space about halfway between Philip and Leeward. Leeward crossed his arms tight across his chest.
Okay, Philip said.
Sure. He told the story again. Leeward, the cart, the push. Jackson coming to back him up. He didn't look at any of them while he spoke, but he didn't put his head down either, just focused on a spot on the wall. When he was done, he shrugged. Well, Namive said, that doesn't sound exactly like your experience, Leeward.
It was an assault, the science lead said. Does it matter how many times they hit me? I was assaulted. Maybe you were, maybe you weren't, Yandro said. You ever been in a fight, Nagata?
Philip felt a surge of something cold. The hum of the rain seemed to go a little quieter.
What are you asking? You ever been in a fight? Ever seen someone really trying to hurt someone else? You see a few guys messing around, it gets a little physical. If you haven't been in a real fight, maybe you get mixed up. See some things that aren't really there.
Philip said, I've been in a fight. But he said it softly, and Namive was talking over him. Regardless, it's clear a line was crossed, and we all know who was involved, so the question for us now is how we move forward. Yandro, these were your crew. They need to make this right. Philip saw the amusement in Yandro's eyes and the corner of his mouth.
Yeah, okay. I'll make sure they come apologize.
You bet. And return the cart, Namive said.
If he needs the cart, he can have the cart.
And Leeward, Namive said, turning to the science lead, I think it would be good for the community if you and some of the science team could help with building the defenses. The cold feeling in Philip's chest shifted, swelled.
What about the vote?
Three sets of eyes turned to him.
We voted to move the town. What about the vote?
Yes, Leeward said, waving a wide hand toward Philip. Exactly. We're past that now, Namive said. Leeward, for the community.
We'll give you the easy jobs, Yandro said. It'll be fun.
Leeward pressed his lips together, thin and bloodless, then stood without speaking and walked out. Yandro chuckled as the door closed. He'd won, and he knew it. Philip knew it, too.
You need to keep your crew in line, Namive said somewhere to Philip's right.
It seemed like she was a long distance away. We desperately need everyone in the community working together.
They will, Yandro said. As long as we're working on the right things, they absolutely will.
Philip rose, made himself nod to both of them, and walked out. There was something wrong with him, but he didn't know what it was. It felt a little like nausea, a little like vertigo. It wasn't either one, though. This was something different. But though he didn't have a name for it, He knew it. He had felt this before. In the plaza, fewer of the buildings had their awnings up. The rain was getting colder and lighter. Philip listened for the song of the monsters behind it, but the white noise of the rain hid anything. If there was trouble coming, someone would have to warn them. And if there wasn't trouble tonight, there would be soon. Every night of peace made the next night more dangerous. Philip thought that felt familiar, too. At the room, Mose was sitting on his cot. His jumpsuit was unzipped to the navel, and his eyes were red and bleary. Even without the smell of alcohol, Philip would have known he'd been drinking. Mose had finally found the still that some enterprising future rich person had set up. Philip sat on his own cot, his back against the wall. His clothes were wet, and rain seeped out of his hair and down his neck. He let it.
"You need a towel, Nagata?" Mose said.
And then, when Philip didn't answer, he pulled a steel bottle out of his pocket. He reached over and put it on the cot by Philip's leg.
"One of the biochemists is making gin. I mean, it's not real gin, but it's close. It's good. No tonic water, but it's got the right..."
He shook his head, searching for a word he couldn't find.
"It's good."
"Thanks," Philip said. But it sounded like someone else's voice. Mose laced his fingers together, then looked down at his hands like they were a puzzle he was trying to solve.
I wanted to apologize. I keep it to myself, you know, but this whole thing, it's made me less good than I used to be, you know? Less professional.
It's okay.
Denial. That's what they call it, yeah? It's just, I can't.
He started to wheeze. It could have been laughing or crying or just the man starting to hyperventilate. Philip waited, watching Mose's knuckles go pale where he was squeezing the blood out of them. After a while, the wheezing stopped.
"Nobody's coming. No ships, no shuttle. The gate's gone. Whatever happened at Alpha, they'd have gotten the radio back up by now. We're all there is. This shit-ass little squat of a town is all that's left."
It was true. It had been true for a while. It was still strange to hear Mose say it out loud, admitting the secret they both already knew. "It makes things more important," Philip said.
"If I think about it too much, I can't do anything. I'm taking off a fastening clip, and I think, what if I break it? We're never going to get another one. What if I fuck it up, and it turns out we need it later on? For this to work, a million things have to go right. For it to fall apart, just one of them has to go wrong."
Philip opened the bottle and took a drink. It wasn't anything like gin, but it wasn't bad. He wiped the mouth of the bottle on his sleeve and passed it over. Mose unlaced his hands to take it. Where he'd squeezed, there were marks in his skin. Philip watched his throat work as he drank. He wasn't leaving much.
"One thing," Mose said. "One thing wrong, and we all die. We're all there is, and we all die. And no one even knows.
Could be worse." Mose's gaze swam slowly upward until it found him. Outside, the rain had stopped, and some of the local insects had started calling to each other, with a sound like an air compressor going bad. Philip looked at him, and when he spoke, he felt like the cold in him was talking.
"What scares me, Mose, it isn't fucking it up and dying. What if we fuck it up, but we don't die? What if we fuck it all up and live? We're at the end of something, sure. Maybe we're at the beginning of something, too. Maybe we make a whole new world, a whole new planet like Earth used to be. Hundreds of generations,
billions of people that all start here. And we fuck it up for them. I don't understand. What if we just go on like people always have? The same bullshit. Give the same bullies and liars power like we did before. Cut all the same corners. Put up with all the same hypocrites. Make everything here into more of the shit that got us here. That seems worse. For me, that's worse. I just want you to know, I'm sorry for how I've been, Mose said. He seemed confused by this new direction the conversation had taken. I try to hold it together, but it all comes out anyway. Everyone's like that right now, Philip said. I'm sorry for how I've been, too. For all of it. Mose started crying then. Not the wheezing, but slow, racking sobs. Philip went and sat beside him, one wet arm around Mose's shoulder, and held him while the sorrow crested and fell away. He let Mose slide down onto the cot, pulled a blanket over the man, who was asleep almost at once. Philip rescued the liquor, put the lid back on, and left it on his own pillow like it was sleeping there. He made one stop on the way to the maintenance barracks. Yandro and his crew had two of the little prefab buildings near the western edge of town. One was standard sleeping quarters, with bunks stacked four high against the walls. The other had a few utility cots like Mose and Philip used, and a lot of supply lockers. A little group was gathered outside the sleeping quarters in the light of half a dozen torches. Philip recognized the long metal shafts with spikes at the ends from the last time the monsters had come. The mat of oily moss burning at the end seemed like an improvement over what they'd had, though. The flame longer lived. He counted 10 people, most of them men, in the flickering light. Yandro, in a chair, leaning back on two legs, had his back against the building. He was at the center, like a king or a celebrity. Philip stepped into the light, and the conversation and laughter went silent. One of the people was Kofi, but the belter didn't acknowledge him. Fair enough. Philip didn't know what he would have done if their places had been switched. Or really, he did. And so he could forgive Kofi for his youth and cowardice. He also saw the two men who'd taken Leeward's cart. Their expressions were blank as snakes. Yandro tilted his head.
Nagata, he said. You're up past your bedtime, yeah?
One of the others snickered, but Philip plastered on a little grin like he was in on the joke. Like the little humiliations were shit he was willing to eat. He knew how to do that. One of the few useful lessons his father had taught him.
Guess so. I had some things on my mind. Yeah?
Yandro let his chair come slowly down. Philip averted his eyes, showing his submission. The coldness in his chest was rage. About what she was saying, Philip said. Namive. Community, you know? The good of the community.
I remember that part, Yandro said. I thought I should clear the air. You didn't do anything to cross me. Maybe Alan and Yuri got a little annoyed, though.
Philip looked over to the two from the cart.
Hey, Alan.
Hey, Yuri.
Hey, subcontractor, Yuri said.
Yandro made a disapproving grunt, and Yuri looked away, chastised.
I just wanted to say...
Philip meant to apologize, but the coldness in his chest wouldn't let him say those words. The lie of it was too big to fit through his throat.
I just wanted things to be right. I want things to be better than they were.
The two glanced at Yandro, unconsciously seeking for what reaction they should have. It was all so familiar, Philip could almost see Sin and Corral, wings and choo-choo, and Andrew. The ghosts of the war he'd fought and lost. The dead he'd turned his back to.
Your boss tell you to come?
Yandro asked. Mose?
No.
I'm just following my conscience. And hey, something else. Something to help, yeah? He took the little red box out of his pocket, sliding off the protective rubber sleeve as he did it. He held it out, careful not to touch the case and the power port at the same time. It was wider than his hand, but just by a little. Yandro frowned and pointed his chin at it.
What is that?
You remember how the slug thrower failed that night the monsters came? They had to cycle the capacitor.
That's true, Kofi said. I heard him talking about it.
Okay, Yandro said, but there was interest in his eyes. Now they were talking about when he'd been a hero. They were talking about killing. He liked that. Philip held up the box with a grin.
This, though?
This is a capacitor from the yeast tanks. Take a look. He tossed it gently, like he was passing a beer to a friend. Yandro caught it, turned it over.
I don't know about this power grid shit, Nagata.
Open the back plate, Philip said. You'll see what I'm talking about. Yandro steadied the box on his knee and pressed against the back plate with a palm.
What does this thing do?
The discharge was as loud as a gunshot and as bright as lightning. Yandro drifted to the side, collapsing slowly in the light gravity. His thigh had popped open like an overcooked sausage, and his eyes were empty.
It kills monsters, Philip said.
But no one was listening to him. They were all shouting and jumping to their feet. Philip turned and walked into the darkness. Yandro's crew were so shocked and confused that he made it almost 30 meters before they caught him. The improvised cell was dark and cold. He lay on the bare floor. Everything hurt. He was pretty sure that at least one of his ribs was cracked, and his left wrist was swollen badly. Whatever other damage the beating left, he'd have to wait to discover. For now, it was enough just to hurt. He knew that day came from a little fault in a weld about a third of the way up the wall. A pinpoint of light that started fainter than the smallest star and grew slowly brighter until a tiny shaft of light pushed through. A pale dot, no bigger than his thumbnail, began its slow track across the floor. He watched it. The air tasted like dust. Outside, there were occasionally voices. He recognized a few. Kofi, Mose, Nami Vey shouting in a way that wasn't her usual style at all. He wondered if she was holding off a lynch mob. It seemed plausible. The shaft of light came closer and closer to the wall, and then faded as the sun came overhead. Philip became aware of a growing thirst, but there wasn't any water, so he tried to sleep instead. The most he could manage was a half-doze, disturbed by his aches. He'd lost all sense of time when the sound of a bolt being thrown roused him. The door opened, light spilling in and around Nami Vey's silhouette. Philip tried to sit up, but his back had stiffened so badly that it took three tries. The administration woman sat across from him. In the spill light from the next room, she looked both tired and resolute. An angel come to pass sentence, or grant absolution. Well, it took 18 hours, she said after a long pause. But we lost him. You are now officially a murderer.
What? Is that funny?
I don't mean to laugh, Philip said. There's some context that makes that... I didn't mean to laugh.
What were you thinking?
The angel was gone. The facade of gentleness and kindness and professionalism was gone. It was almost like meeting her for the first time. The weary anger in the words was like the back of his own head given voice. That it had to be done, he said. And no one else was going to do it. It didn't have to be done. I've known men like Yandro. He showed you what he was. He showed all of us what he was. And he got away with it. There's no law with a man like that. The town voted, but he was more important. And you bent. You failed. You let him do what he wanted, and there was never going to be a path back for him. When someone like that wins, he'd never stop pushing. And so you decided that deserved a death sentence. You're seeing the irony here, right? There's a difference, Philip said. You're going to punish me. I'm going to answer for what I did. Nami Vey shook her head. Oh, Jesus. This is how it's supposed to go. You do something wrong, and you're supposed to pay for it, supposed to suffer. That's what keeps the Yandros from taking over everything all the time, just because they can. So that's your plan. Make yourself a martyr on the cross of the law. Am I supposed to thank you for that? You don't understand what men like him are. Of course I do, Nami Vey said. Alejandro was a bully and narcissist, and more than a little sadistic, too. And he was physically strong, and he was charismatic, and he was brave. He'd throw himself into danger without a second thought. Leeward? He's one of the smartest people I've ever met, and he's a snob. He can't ask you to pass him a fork without rubbing someone the wrong way. Adia will work double shifts and never complain for the rest of her life if you let her, and she'll stir up romantic drama every chance she gets. Moses is a solid worker and emotional wreck. Merton is one of the most lovely, empathetic, kind-hearted people I've ever met, and he's already got a still set up in the biolab because he's an alcoholic. We're all like this. This is what humans are. Yonder was different, Philip said. And you, she said, leaning over and putting her hand on his ankle. You're a very experienced technician with an irreplaceable wealth of knowledge and experience. You're also desperate to be punished for something, and I don't know why. He would have taken over. You'd have lost control to him. Maybe. If I have to die for saving you from that, it's all right. Nami Vey's laugh was low and earthy and rueful. Oh, no. As my sainted mother would say, no easy way out for you. I failed at a lot of things, but I won't be the one who gives this settlement capital punishment. Can you walk? Can I get some water first? Walking hurt badly when they started. His whole body was stiff. And when they got outside, he could see the bruising more clearly. All the others in the town lined the little, almost streets. Mose was there, looking dour. A clot of people in maintenance crew uniforms, standing together with hatred in their eyes. They didn't follow, but they watched him pass. Philip tried to keep his back straight, to carry himself with some dignity. Nami Vey walked with him, ready to steady him if he needed it. He made a point not to. Yesterday's rain had left the ground slick with mud, but the sky was wide and clear now, cloudless. Philip found himself expecting the crowd to do something, cheer him or vent their rage. They stayed quiet, watching him go. By the time they reached the wall at the edge of town, his joints were starting to loosen. His wrist had angry, shooting pains when he tried to turn it, but that was the worst. He didn't complain. Nami Vey walked out the access gate between the plates that had once been the hull of a ship. The southern valley rolled out before them.
It was easy staying inside the town to forget how wide the valley was and how full. Things that looked not entirely unlike trees rose along the banks of the river below them. A pack of long-legged animals, somewhere between deer and huge spiders, made their way to the west, following some trail he couldn't see or else making their own. A pile of equipment lay in a circle where human boots had crushed the ground cover. Nami Vey walked to it and stopped.
"That's an emergency blanket you can use for shelter," she said, pointing to a tiny silver packet. "That's a micro-solar array. It'll power the yeast cylinder there. Moses said that the carbon fixation chamber is only good for about 2 years at best, so you should find something local that provides sugar if you can. Hopefully the device can make it non-toxic for you. But be careful eating new things."
"Exile?"
"It's the compromise I could make," she said. "The maintenance team wanted you dead, no surprise. I think Leeward would have given you a public stipend and housing. It was between incarcerating you in town or... This takes up fewer resources. It's the best I could do. It's probably more than I deserve.
If anyone from maintenance sees you here in the next 5 years, they'll probably just kill you, and I won't be able to stop them. I think most of the rest of the town wouldn't, but there are some that would, and you won't know which is which. After that, if you're still alive, you can come petition to be let back in, if we've survived that long." He looked at the equipment. It was heavy, but it wasn't unworkable. There were straps on the yeast cylinder and a mounting for the solar array. He could wear it on his back and trickle power into the food supply, as long as he didn't walk in the shade. A bottle for water, and if he stayed by the river, he'd have enough. Unless some native microorganism slipped through the filter and decided he was a good environment to set up shop in his bloodstream.
"All right," he said. "Thank you. I'll go. Do you have a plan?"
"No," he said.
"Maybe I'll try for Alpha. It's a long way, but there could be supplies there. Maybe people. If not, I can find out what happened to them."
"If you figure out why the choice you made to kill Yandro was wrong, come back to us, okay? I'll do everything I can to make sure you have a place here." Philip picked up the emergency blanket. It was very light and small enough to put in a pocket.
"Thank you. But I don't deserve any mercy."
"Of course you don't. That's why they call it mercy. If you deserve it, they call it justice." She put her hand on his arm, the way she always did with people. It seemed more genuine to him now.
"I'm going to do everything I can to keep these people alive. I'm going to compromise and bend and be adulterated and impure and imperfect. And there's going to be a time, not too long from now, that I'm really going to wish you were here. Just like I'm really going to wish Alejandro was." Philip was silent, but she nodded like he'd spoken. "That's the mystery, and that was your clue," she said, stepping back. "Try to figure it out." He watched her as she walked back to the wall and then past it. Once she had vanished, he got to the task of loading up his kit. It was like a little scattered ship. The blanket was his environmental controls. The cylinder was his food recycler. The planet, vast around him, was his air recycler. There was a logic to survival that didn't change, no matter which vastness he was traveling through. And the regret was there too, the way it always had been. He walked south, keeping far enough from the river that the land wasn't damp. It was less than an hour before the valley curved and Emmerling Voss Permanent Settlement Beta passed out of sight. The sun tracked to the west, reddening, and Philip found what seemed like a good spot to make the first camp of his new life.
The yeast output was less than he'd hoped, but the carbon fixation chamber looked clean. He found a creek and filtered the water before he drank it. At sunset, the stars came out, the great smear of the galactic disk. The universe that humankind had once been heir to and then lost, now just a light show and a promise, or a hope. In the distance, the monsters began to sing.